Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
It's showtime, Synergy. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. Dude, I got Don with me. Unfortunately, Andy is on a safari searching for the world's finest albums.
Oh, yes.
And he'll be back
soon,
whenever that exhibition ends.
I thought he was just preparing for his fantasy draft.
Yeah, yeah, it could be too. I mean, he does need to buckle down. He hasn't been winning any championships, but you know, I miss him. So here we are, just the two of us, and this is the Album Nerds Podcast, and we've got a great show for you today. We're each going to discuss an album that we consider to be a hidden gem, something that maybe has been missed by many ears. We'll discuss those. Don's going to ask us a deep question. Or it's going to ask me a deep question. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some shout-outs to some albums and album-related items that we're digging. And then we're going to spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we'll be talking about next time. But this week, it's all about them gems.
That's what I'm talking about!
Well, some albums, despite their quality, do not receive the recognition or popularity they deserve. So today, I guess we're going to fix that problem. And we're both going to present albums we consider to be hidden gems.
Yes. And that's so subjective and so weird because, you know, there are really well-known artists that I think put out albums that they're considered crappy among their discography, mm-hmm. but are still really good, you know? Mm-hmm. Or they made missteps creatively. So what else did you consider besides your big pick? What was on your mind grapes there, Donnie?
Well, there's one I'll mention later in digging, so I'll save that. Ooh. But one that came to mind is an album by Pink Floyd. Not sure if you've heard of them. So it's probably, I'm not sure how under the radar it is, but there was an album from 1972 called Obscured by Clouds. And it's technically a soundtrack to this French film, La Vallée or something.
Bad pronunciations are Andy's job. Oh, that's so
right. Well, filling in. But yeah, so this was right in between metal and The Dark Side of the Moon. And it's really an excellent album. And I'm sure it probably went platinum or something, but I just feel like if you were new to the Pink Floyd catalog, this would not be one of the first ones you'd end up on. But how about you?
Yeah, so there were a couple things I thought about. Blind Melon, their second album, Soup, you know, the No Rain guys. Mm-hmm. This was 1995, a follow-up to the self-titled, but Soup was dark. The lead singer, Shannon Hoon, was having some really, like, he had drug issues and other issues, and they were really coming to a head when they recorded this. There's no happy hippie vibes. Mm-hmm. It's sonically experimental. There's Zeppelin-y moments, but lots of backtrack loops and some weird stuff going on. Critically just slaughtered at the time. Mm-hmm. And then Shannon died about a month after its release. It's now considered an underrated hidden gem, and that they were just being super creative and it wasn't what people wanted to hear, No Rain, over and over again. Another one, you'll appreciate this, Don. Mm-hmm. Ours, Distorted Lullabies, released in 2001. Emotionally intense, ethereal melodies, raw, haunting vocals from Jimmy Necco. We've talked about the band before, but this was their first official album, and I still love it.
Yeah, I enjoy it too.
It fits in the mopey world of The Cure, but it's a little harder rocking than that. So yeah, that's what I was thinking about as well.
Good one.
I think so. All right, so let's get to what we actually chose.
You choose me?
I had to dig deep under the radar for this one.
You used a book.
Yeah, that's true. yeah, in fact, I found this. I don't know if we mentioned the Rock Snobs Dictionary before. You know, great book, you know, if you can find a copy of it. But there's a list there of, I don't know if they called it hidden gems or under the radar or something like that.
Yeah, underrated or something.
Yeah, but this is one of those. So from the band Talk Talk, English band formed in London in 1981, kind of known for sort of a new wavy synth sound. The album's called Spirit of Eden, released in September 1988. Features guitarist Mark Hollist, vocalist guitarist Mark Hollist, Lee Harris on drums, and Paul Webb on bass. The producer, Tim Freeze Green, basically co-wrote all the songs, also plays some instruments on it. But this is a radical departure from their earlier synth pop sound. So here's a cut called Eden.
Kind of sounds like a mashup of like Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins solo work mashed into one sound, at least on that song.
So, you know, like the whole album, it incorporates elements of jazz, I guess ambient and experimental rock. The song's got a slow atmospheric buildup.
Now, are you sure it's not ambient and experimental rock? Because it's a little sleepy.
Yeah, it is. This song in particular, but this album kind of reminds me of the Velvet Underground a little bit, sort of that post-rock sound slowly building. Almost all the lyrics deal with like spirituality and transcendence. But
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, this album pretty much came out of nowhere for this band, you know. So, I mean, they had like three successful albums.
Their record label must have been just not happy.
EMI was not happy.
This is very Cathedral-esque, right? Like, I know it's a weird connection, but I kept kind of picturing the scene in Home Alone when Kevin is sitting on Christmas Eve alone in the church, like this kind of dimly lit church with the, you know, the kids singing, but that ethereal sort of organ sound.
It kind of seems like that's what they were going for.
It's worshipful somehow, but not specifically about any kind of higher power per se.
Mm-hmm.
Just the essence of life.
Well, let's hear another cut. This is actually the final cut on the album called Wealth.
Yeah, that's where I was really hearing the Peter Gabriel.
I actually kind of hear Steve Winwood or something, too, in his voice.
Yeah, for sure. It's the spirit of Peter Gabriel's solo work, I think, around the same period of time, but much more organic, I would say. Peter Gabriel was experimenting more with sounds and technology and things, and this seems kind of like a step back from what they were doing with the synth pop. Although I listened to some of their older records, and there are strings and moments that you can hear this coming.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, so the previous album, The Color of Spring in 1986, it has hints of this. Like, I compare it to Radiohead. So Color of Spring was OK Computer, and then this is Kid A, where they take it, they go too far with it or something.
Yeah, and I would imagine, I don't know this for sure, but this has to have been an inspiration for Radiohead and bands like it, I would think.
Yeah, I've seen it cited, Radiohead, Bon Iver, I never know how to pronounce it. Well, my clickbait headline for Spirit of Eden is Talk Talk commits commercial suicide, but the notes they left behind live on. Get it? Because it's like a suicide note.
Sure. So they killed their career.
Yeah. And I mean, they were allowed to make one more record after this, which was more of this type of thing. And I don't know. They stopped recording after that. But I think the first few listens, I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I mean, I guess I was more impressed that they just were doing something completely off book. But the more I listen to it, I actually see it as actually a really good album. After a while, you start to recognize they're not really hooks, but there's little melodic parts that kind of stay in your head. And I guess it's more of an album like that you experience. You know, it's a sonic experience. It's different from, six pop songs. You know, it's 6 8-minute, kind of adventures.
Yeah, it definitely a tough speaker listen. You don't hear all the details, and it's easy to kind of tune out. That's the problem with these kind of records. Their earlier albums, lyrics were a more important part of the sound, right? And you have long periods of little lyric to no lyric. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily feel like the song is moving along unless you're hearing all the little details on headphones.
Yep. All right, well, let's hear another track. This is I Believe in You.
I like the bass line there. I'd say it's the most accessible track on the album, which makes it a little more emotionally potent, I think, because there's more words. Mm. It's more traditional sounding. It's a nice break from the, heavens opening and the angels' choirs coming down or whatever. The melody is supported by minimalist instrumentation, which, again, that's different compared to a lot of the rest of the album. Themes of faith and addiction, but it never really picks up pace. It's hypnotic, I think, like a lot of the album. But it is probably the most comforting to me.
I think they actually made a video for this.
Oh my God.
This is the one the record label's like, oh, well, that's the single.
Yep. I would have picked it as the single as well. So what was it? Him just laying on the grass with a close-up on his face in black and white
or
something?
It's just like him and a guitar for the most part. I don't know.
All right, so my clickbait headline to describe the album, Spirit of Eden revolutionized rock and no one noticed until years later. You're welcome, 90s alternative. I think this helped shape the sound of what alternative rock became, which was just basically being willing to experiment with other sounds. You know, there were very specific boxes in the 80s when alt rock started taking off, and those boxes were largely hip hop, dance pop, glam rock, and, you know, the heavy metal stuff. But that was off to the side a little bit too. Yeah. So yeah, I think this definitely, I can hear influences everywhere from this, and I wasn't expecting that. Yeah. I wasn't expecting much.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like 1988 to me.
No.
And what I like about it is it's still mostly traditional instruments. You know, they're doing interesting things with the usual stuff. It's not a lot of studio trickery. There's not electronic noises and things like that. So it's very organic.
That's what I appreciate about it.
So you agree that it's a hidden gem?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I certainly had never heard of it. I'd only little bit heard of Talk Talk, mostly because of No Doubt's cover of It's My Life. So I knew it was a British group of some kind. That was about it.
Well, someday we'll have to ask Andy what he thinks of this record.
Yeah, I would like to know what he's thinking.
All right. Well, so that was Talk Talk with Spirit of Eden.
All right. Before we get to Don's deep question, we're going to hear from our friends over at the Six Picks Music Club podcast.
Hey there, I'm Dave, and I host Six Picks Music Club with my two buddies, Jeff Rowe and Russ. We talk about six songs on a playlist that meet a theme to a topic that we've already decided on.
Just real quick, do you meet themes? Do you meet them?
Okay, no, I don't know. I guess that, what's the...
Russ, could I get a ruling on the verbal phrase, meet the theme?
Jeff, I don't know. I'm not fluent in the spoken word.
People just don't say meet the theme. They say fit a theme. And every week we talk about six songs that fit a theme.
All right. Okay, fit a theme.
Guys, we're going to have to re-record this.
Ah, fuck my
Okay, and Dave, don't forget, it's Six Picks Music Club, not your dark web pod, Sex Picks Booty Grub.
Jeez. Boy, I bet there's a lot of onion busting going on that show.
Like fun.
All right, so check them out if you want to hear about their six picks.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Okay, well, it's time for Deep Questions by Don. This week's question, where's Andy? Just kidding. So, no, seriously, dude, what else do you enjoy that is under the radar or could be considered a hidden gem?
The first thing that came to mind was a show from Netflix called Lilyhammer.
Oh, yeah. I know that show.
Yes. Yeah, so Lilyhammer, I think originally was made in Norway, and the first season was on Norwegian NRK1. And so then they made a deal with Netflix to get it distributed, but it was the first Netflix original series back when that was just such a new concept. I was still getting the DVDs at the time too. So it's a crime comedy, and it was Steven Van Zandt, little Stevie from Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. He plays a gangster. He was also in The Sopranos, but he plays a gangster that Frank the Fixer Tagliano tries to start a new life in Lilyhammer in the witness protection program. And it's a fish out of water thing, you know, with the culture and his, you know, talking about beautiful broads and stuff like that. It's just, it lasted like three seasons, maybe four. I really enjoyed it and I recommend it to a lot of people, but I have run into very few that have actually watched it. It's funny. It's weird the way that these nice, innocent people, even the criminals are like, not as nasty as they typically would be. So, yeah, I think that's kind of a hidden gem. I think they pulled it off of Netflix, but it made a comeback. I'm not sure.
Yeah, have to look. What I liked about it was because they asked him where he wanted to go for witness protection, and he thought of Lillehammer because of the Winter Olympics. I think it was 94. Yeah. Oh, it looks like a nice place. Yeah.
Didn't you see the Olympics in 94? Clean air, fresh white snow, gorgeous broads. It was beautiful.
So for me, I couldn't remember if I talked about it on air before or if I just had the conversation with you or Andy, but also of Scandinavian origin, there's a lawn game called Coob.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah,
well, anyway, I'll repeat myself. So it's just...
that wouldn't be the first time.
So you basically have like these wooden blocks that you set up and you knock them over with these like dowels or sticks, but it's a cool game because there's actually some strategy, you know, like where you place things and stuff like that. So some people refer to it as Viking chess, but it's called Kub, K-U-B-B.
Mm, yeah.
And yeah, I think it supposedly comes from Norway or Sweden or something like that.
Cool.
And of course, a hidden gem, the Album Nerds podcast.
Maybe. Sure. And right now, the hidden gem, Andy. gotta find that guy.
All right, man, just call me back. Fucking miss you.
All right, so what do you like that's under the radar or that could be considered a hidden gem? Let us know. Hit us up on Instagram or Facebook, or check out our website, albumnerds.com.
Okay, so my hidden gem pick is by a band named Brad. Doesn't inspire a lot of confidence for some reason. The album is called Shame from April of 1993. Just a few months later, Verses by Pearl Jam came out. And the reason that matters is Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam is the lead guitarist of this band. Also in the band, Sean Smith on vocals, Reagan Hagar on drums, and Jeremy Toback on bass.
Jeremy Toback.
They had to have made those jokes, right?
Low-hanging fruit.
That's what we specialize in. So why don't we check out a little bit of the opening track, Buttercup.
Buttercup. I know that ain't a part of the deal.
Yeah, so that's a little different than Pearl Jam, right?
I like the way he holds the ooh for like way longer than you'd think he would, and it works.
Yeah, I mean, the guy can sing. It's soulful. Yeah. The lyrics are poetic and kind of ambiguous, which kind of adds to the song's mystique. There's that vulnerability and kind of emotional depth, which Sean Smith, I think, kind of brought to the mix here. Buttercup kind of seems like a term of endearment, right?
Yeah.
So you're not my buttercup, but there's such sadness that it feels like clearly there's something wrong with this relationship. So you go into this thing. This is the first song you hear. What were your expectations? Were they met?
I would say they exceeded my expectations. I didn't really have any expectations because I had not heard of Brad. I vaguely remember the album cover, I think, which we can talk about. But I mean, the thing that struck me, and I'll talk more about it in a minute, but Sean Smith's voice is just really special. Yeah. You know, and I don't even know who the guy is. Like the bands. What was the band he was in? Like
Satchel.
That's the one. Yeah,
the most well known.
Never heard them. So yeah, this was great. And then you know the whole album just is different. You know, it takes you in different places, and his voice goes to different places. So. I was really, you know, blown away by it, and I'm really surprised that I, you know, had not heard anything about it before.
Yeah. A buddy of mine knew about it back in 93, a Pearl Jam freak like myself, so that's why we listened to it. I was disappointed because I wanted it to sound like Pearl Jam, but, it doesn't. You know, it does not. So that song in particular kind of exemplifies what made Brad different from other bands of the era, and it's more about mood and emotion than it is about filling in the grunge mold. So why don't we jump into the second track, which actually a little more aggressive, but still funkier than you would expect. This one's called My Fingers. There's shades of Mother Love Bone there, which would have come from Gossard, I think, anyway.
I think Gossard's guitar is the only one that's on this record. And I like that I actually get to hear it, because when I hear a Pearl Jam record, you know, I don't know if it's MacReady or Gossard that I'm hearing.
MacReady tends to do the more shreddy, bluesy, rock god stuff, and Stone Gossard is more of a, he drives the foundation. I wouldn't say he's a rhythm guitarist, but he definitely is more in the grooves than on the top.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
And so that song, I think at the time it was the thing that sustained me, that made me think, okay, this is, I hear some noise and some distortion and some effects on the vocals. But that song does showcase Stone Gossard's riff-driven guitar work. It's groovy and raw. Jeremy's bass line is deep, and it got this nice undercurrent throughout the song. Lyrics, like I said, are ambiguous. It suggests maybe actions and intentions, like that your choices aren't always under your own control. I don't know. It's hard to say. Yeah. And that was one of the struggles for me, too. Like, Pearl Jam somewhat spelled it out back in those days, at least from their first record. So my clickbait headline to describe the album, Grunge's Best Kept Secret, Brad's Shame, the Overlooked Masterpiece You Need to Hear. Now, maybe it's not a masterpiece, but it's definitely a damn good album. And it's not what you expect from Seattle sound of 1993, but it's really nice that they had the freedom to do it. And I think that came from Gossard being like, you know what? I can do whatever the hell I want now.
It's, I mean, I guess it's debatable, you know, to what extent it's grunge, you know,
it's not.
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, if grunge is even really right. A genre, which I'm not convinced it is.
Yeah, because I definitely was not, you know, really going there, you know, in the first listens. But I was listening in my office, and a student came in. They said, oh, is this Nirvana? And I'm like, what?
What?
So I guess they must have something that, it must have been particular part that they might just be looking for a, you know, some connection point to me. Like, oh, he's old. He knows. I'll mention Nirvana.
Oh, perhaps. You know, what's funny about the name of the band, kind of hinted at Brad not really telling you anything about what they would sound like. They wanted to be called Shame, which gives you a little more of an idea, but apparently a band already existed with that name, and Brad Wilson was a band member in Shame, so they changed it. They made their name Brad.
I like that.
I wish they'd gone with Wilson.
Wilson!
Yeah.
All right, why don't we get into the next song? This one's called 20th Century. Yeah, the groove sustains you. Yeah. The lyrics, not so much.
He actually kind of sounds like Lenny Kravitz or something on that song.
Yeah, I actually was going to say he sounds like Johnny Jamiroquai or whatever the guy's name is from. Jamiroquai. You know? Yeah. It's kind of that vibe to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, very funky track. Love Gossard's, you know, little guitar, whatever you call the Nile Rodgers style, whatever that is.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, lyrically, it
doesn't matter. I don't think it matters too
much. No, probably not. But I read like anticipation and nervousness about the end of the century. So.
Yeah. Oh, was this a Y2K song? No one was talking about that yet in 93. Right. We were all oblivious, like, oh, that's forever away.
So my clickbait headline for Shame is Don finds Brad on 90s rock app and swipes right.
Is that the one? Is that the one where you want to bang them?
Yes, or
is
that's that the
you don't
exactly.
like them.
So okay, I like Brad. That's the point.
I'm too old to know about that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I fell in love with Brad.
Check out the big brain on Brad.
I mean. Sean Smith is great, and I'm surprised I hadn't heard of him. I mean, not that I know everything, but, you know, he's never been on my radar before.
Did you listen to the rest of their albums?
No, not yet.
Yeah, they kept releasing them every few years. They had one recently, but unfortunately, Sean passed away in 2019, so the one that was released in, like, 2022 was the last of his performances. Yeah.
For a side project, I mean, they seem to have chemistry.
They're real. Yeah, it's a real thing. I think that's part of what makes it a hidden gem is it's not just a side project for the fun of it. This was a passion project as well, I'd say.
Yeah. And it's just so diverse. And it doesn't feel quite as like angsty, I guess. I mean, it's dark and sad, I think, but it's like more emotional. It's a different emotion, right? So I think with Pearl Jam and you know, other, you know, Seattle artists at the time, they were just a little more angry, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Eddie and Sean couldn't be any more different in their approaches than they are, which I think is part of what makes this so interesting and almost to a point where the Pearl Jam connection almost doesn't matter. These are just great musicians making really interesting blend of sounds in a time when these blends weren't really coming together very often.
Weird album cover, though. It freaks me out. Those people, are they in masks? I don't even know what...
Well, it looks like the, you know, in the old days at Disney World and stuff, when they had the big plastic heads on, like to be the dwarves or whatever. Yeah, it's freaking creepy. Yeah. And I couldn't find anything to really explain it other than like where the picture was taken. But... Maybe they just thought it'd be funny. I need to know. If anyone out there has the inside scoop, at Album Nerds on the socials. Cool. All right. So, check out the album. Nadine's a really great track. Bad for the Soul, I think, kind of is a good title for a song on this record. And Rockstar is not what you expect. Also, Beware at the end. A very creepy voice. comes in, you have this pleasant, soulful, sad experience, and then there's this voice. So when it comes in, listen, but just be warned. All right, so that was Brad with Shame, a hidden gem.
Yes,
I say yes. All right.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Yeah. So this is usually the part where like Andy says something about having a bag full
of satchel or sack or baggies.
Oh yeah, there's baggies.
Yeah, so basically some sort of storage solution for the many new releases and things he's been digging, because that guy listens to a lot of music. That's why he's on his safari looking for new albums.
Okay, well, so this is when we talk about what else we've been digging. So dude, what have you been digging?
All right, well, I've been digging quite a few things, and one I want to get to eventually is the Fontaines DC album that just came out, but I've been trying to immerse myself in that a little bit more. But one that I'd been looking forward to, Lainey Wilson's Whirlwind, her follow-up. Lainey Wilson's Whirlwind. We brought this back just hopefully for the last time. it's her fifth studio album, but her follow-up to the big breakthrough of the bell-bottom country. This was released August 23rd, 14 tracks that she co-wrote. So let's listen to a little bit of Country's Cool Again.
So is she calling out like Beyonce and Post Malone for going country? Everybody wants to be country now?
I think she's just saying that it is cool again and they're part of that wave. She's not the talk to the hand type. So yeah, I mean, I haven't listened to the whole album a lot of times yet, and it definitely is, a lot of it is in reaction to the whirlwind of fame that she's experiencing. But it's fun. She sounds great. It's everything I hoped for. Hopefully it'll become more like her last album, but I've been enjoying it. Did you listen to it at all?
I've not listened to the new album. I do remember enjoying, you know, much of the last album, and you know, kind of expecting her to grow. So maybe this is what I'm waiting for.
All right, and the next one, I like to do a vinyl album that I've recently picked up or been listening to. I stumbled upon a album by various artists that I used to have on cassette when I was a young boy who liked to breakdance. It was a compilation called Electric Breakdance. It was released in 1984. It features many artists: Nucleus, D-Train, Grandmaster Flash, and Melly Mel, Run DMC. Why don't we listen to a little bit of Jam On It by Nucleus? Jam on it. I jam on it. I say jam. Yeah, man. I mean, that's more electro than, you know, a lot of the other hip-hop going on. Sort of has some shades of your George Clinton and stuff like that. But yeah, jam on it. I used to say that a lot. And I remember on The Cosby Show when Theo was jamming on the one when Stevie Wonder was on the show. But yeah, this was the first time I ever heard Run DMC. It's Like That. We talked about that when we talked about the Run DMC record. And this was my introduction to that. So, you know, I don't think compilation albums, I mean, maybe you're just a way of discovering, I guess playlists are the equivalent now, but yeah, it was pretty cool. So it was really, I saw that in the bin. I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. Now, it originally came with a giant poster of breakdancing moves. This did not have the poster included. It probably would have cost a lot more if it did. But, but yeah, that's cool. So what you digging, my friend?
Well, back to hidden gems, Dennis Wilson, right? One of the members of the Beach Boys.
The only surfer.
Yeah, true. That's true. The only surfer, but brother of Brian and Carl. He did a solo album, his only solo album in 1977. It was called Pacific Ocean Blue. And this is also on that Rock Snobs list of hidden gems.
Wow.
So I have no original thoughts.
Yeah. It seems like it.
Here's the opening cut, River Song.
Sounds kind of Beach Boys-y.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of Brian influence. But it tends to be, his voice is much more gruff. I think Dennis was doing some hard living, and it comes out in this album.
Those were the rumors, yes.
But definitely a record people should check out. And then for something new, although it's an older artist, Kate Pearson of the B-52s.
Oh, man. Which one was she?
Red-haired.
Or they both had
B-52s. Yeah, it depends on the video. Yeah. But she has a solo album coming out on September 20th called Radios and Rainbows. Here's the single, Take Me Back to the Party.
It's so funny how things come full circle, because it feels like B-52s, that kind of sound was probably an inspiration for artists like Katy Perry, and this sounds like it was inspired somewhat by artists like Katy Perry.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not the biggest B-52s fan in the world, but I always kind of liked her. And
why not?
but I liked the duets she did, you know, of course, with R.E.M. She did one with Iggy Pop that was really good, too. So, yeah, I just think she has a unique voice, and I'm looking forward to checking out this record when it comes out.
Cool.
All right. Well, I don't know, maybe eventually we'll find out what Andy is digging, but for now, digging out of his... What were they called? Clam diggers or something? Or
clam diggers. I think he's probably wearing a fanny pack on safari right now. Whatever he's digging is in there.
Do you think he has the hat with like the... There's like something that blocks the sun from your neck. You know what I'm talking about? That people wear on safari.
The flappy things.
Yeah, the flappy things.
Probably. I mean, whatever's the coolest look, Andy's got it.
Right, well, what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about the time on the show when I'm reminded of the words of Charlotte Bronte from Evening Solace. The human heart has hidden treasures, in secret kept, in silence sealed. The thoughts, the hopes, the dreams, the pleasures, whose charms were broken, if revealed. With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, the Wheel of Musical Discovery, and see what we'll be discovering next week.
As music fans, you know that the rhythm and beat are the driving force of any album. Next time, you will be diving into albums that showcase legendary drummers. What defines a legendary drummer? I'll leave that for you to decide.
It's going to be legend, wait for it, dairy. Legendary drummers on the next episode. Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. We just did Keith Moon not too long ago.
Yeah, that's that would have been a good one. But I'm sure there's plenty of examples where drummers really can make a huge impact in the sound of a band. So we'll find a couple albums that fit that bill. Sweet. Don't forget, you can suggest topics for the wheel on our website, albumnerds.com, as well as vote on any ongoing Album Nerds Hall of Fame nominations.
Who's your favorite legendary drummer? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. Also, please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next time with those legendary drummers. Peace out.
This is called I Am Spartacus. Boom, boom, boom. Ching, ching.
Play that Spartacus thing for me one more time, would you?
Keep this a duet.
Dale Paxton?
You are my biggest fan.
All right, catch y'all next time.